21. Ah, so let's read together.
Na trasha iha va karyo maddasta dri nipatana vata varsha bayenalam tat Tranam vihitam hiva na trasha iha va karyo maddastadri nipatana vata varsha bayenalam tat Tranam vihitam hiva na trasha iha va karyo maddasta dri nipatana vata varsha bayenalam tat Tranam vihitam hiva
Natrashaya vakaryo patavarshabayenalam tatranam ibhitamiva.
Matajis.
Na
not.
Trasaha,
fear.
Iha,
in this matter.
Vaha,
by you.
Karyaha,
should be felt.
Mat hasta,
from my hand.
Adri,
of the mountain.
Nipatana,
of the falling.
Vata,
of the wind.
Varsha,
and the rain.
Bayena,
with fear.
Alam,
enough.
Tatranam,
the deliverance from that.
Vihitam,
has been provided.
He,
certainly.
Vaha,
for you. Translation by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid of the wind and the rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Text number 22.
Tata nirvivishur gartam krishna vasita manasaha yata vakasam sadanaha savraja sopaji vinaha.
Translation. The minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they all entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. puppet. All the domestic animals of Vrindavan were brought beneath Govardhan Hill for shelter.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobheshtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajata Sagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Sri Vishakanvitam Stam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyaye Vacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here, Vaishnavis, particularly Astasakhi Mataji and Vasudev Prabhu. We'll try to speak a few things about this two verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just to recap a little bit, a lot of devotees have been discussing this pastime now for the last few weeks. And of course, it's very, very auspicious that we are discussing this particular pastime in this month of Damodar, when this pastime actually took place. So it's all the more relishing for us and all the more spiritually stimulating. So we have now come to a situation where Lord Krishna, this age of 7 years, has now lifted Govardhan Hill and is holding it on the smallest finger of his left hand, just to show us that, you know, for him, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is absolutely insignificant. And in fact, it was described that he lifted the Govardhan Hill just like how somebody would lift a mushroom. Right? It was so easy for him. And all those Brajavasis, you know, they are watching Lord Krishna lift the Govardhan Hill. And it is not that all these Brajavasis have not seen the exploits of Lord Krishna. Right? They have been with him now for the last 7 years, and they have been seeing so many things that he has done, right from killing of Putana to Trinavarta and Agasura, and all this, you know, big demons have already been killed by Lord Krishna. And these Brajavasis are perfectly aware that there is something. I mean, they may not be aware that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are definitely aware that there is something very, very powerful about this small boy. But yet, when he lifted this Govardhan Hill right in front of their eyes, you know, this huge mountain, obviously it must have made a very huge sound when the Lord lifted it. So, and if you look at this diorama that is there down, you'll see the expression on the faces of all the Brajvasis, you know, which has been captured so wonderfully by our wonderful artist, Milan Bagh. You know, like Gaurang Prabhu was glorifying him in Wada. And, you know, this person who did all these dioramas, you know, he was a personal associate of Srila Prabhupada. And he was actually, he had done so many dioramas for Srila Prabhupada and, you know, carrying on in the legacy. You know, the last 40 years, he has done so many wonderful dioramas for Radha Gopinath Temple. So the expression on the faces of the Brajvasis is just enough for us to understand that obviously, you know, they are not just fearful, but they were completely terrified, you know, to see this huge mountain now standing up in the hands of Lord Krishna, you know, who was still a very young boy at that time. So they were so terrified, and Krishna could see the expression on their faces that he had to actually reassure them, telling them, don't be fearful, don't be afraid. All of you can come into the shelter of this mountain. Right? So this quality of fear that is all pervading in this material world, you know, to some extent even affected the Brajvasis. You know, they really became scared to see this huge mountain. And one sees that actually this whole world is going around by this particular emotion known as fear. Everybody is so fearful of just having to maintain themselves, you know, of just earning a livelihood, looking after their children, and even going out on the streets of Mumbai is so fearful nowadays, right? You're traveling in a car and all of a sudden you happen to just bump into somebody and, you know, for all that you know, that person could just get out of the car and take a gun and shoot you, right? Such a thing can only happen in India. If you go abroad, you know, even if there's a major accident, I have seen it with my own eyes. We were in Russia, in Moscow, and the car in which we were traveling was just going, you know, quite sedately, so to say, and all of a sudden somebody from behind banged into our car. And we were completely caught unawares. And I was just wondering now, what will people do, you know, what will be the scene, because I had so many memories of how people would behave in Bombay. But then it was just that the person from behind, he got off from the car, he came to the person, you know, who was driving our car. By the time this person had also got out, both of them shook hands, and then, you know, this person already had his, insurance card with him, so this is my insurance company and this is my telephone number, and that person gave his insurance card, and so both of them, you know, just shared their insurance particulars, and this person got into his car and that person got into his car, and both of them went away, you know, happily. And then this person is, you know, and I'm seeing this person, you know, obviously our car was quite badly affected, although nothing happened to us, but this person was driving the car as if nothing had happened, you know. And I was thinking to myself, oh, this is so wonderful, you know. You know, here is a country where people identify themselves so much with their bodies, you know, and yet, you know, when something happens, you know, everything is so orderly and so systematic and everything is so wonderfully taken care of, there is no concern. They know that the insurance company finally will be footing the bill. But here in Bharat Varsha, which is supposed to be a place where all of us are aware that we are not this body, yet we identify ourselves with our car so much that even if there's a small bump, you know, and actually this has happened. Like that day I was reading in the newspaper that one motorcycle, by, you know, at the traffic signal, it just happened to scrape on the side of a car. Just scrape. I mean, it was nothing, insignificant. You know, he must have just lost his balance a little bit, wobbled. But this man who was sitting inside the car, he became so angry that he actually took out an iron rod which he had kept in his boot, and then he hit this motorcycle driver on his head. And this person, you know, collapsed over there, and, you know, he had to be taken to the hospital, and everybody came over there, and actually it was a very, very small thing. So this is Bharat Varsha, where, you know, people are, their consciousness, you know, that we are not this body is there, but yet, so that's this quality of fear, you know, which is so prominent in people's hearts. But then we understand from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam that devotees are actually fearless. Nothing actually perturbs them. So many instances in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you take right from the beginning, you know, the life of Parikshit Maharaj, right? Now, Parikshit Maharaj was obviously not an ordinary person. Right? His lineage was absolutely, blue-blooded, right? He was a grandson of the Pandavas, the great-grandson of Pandu, the son of Arjuna, right? I'm sorry, the grandson of Arjuna, the son of Abhimanyu. And he was the ruler of the whole planet Earth. But the moment he got the news that he is destined to die within 7 days, and this news was actually conveyed to him by Shamik Rishi himself, who was actually, Srila Prabhupada explains, was so repentant. You know, he was feeling in his heart that his son, such an immature boy, you know, what right did he have to curse this king for such an insignificant offense of putting a snake around his shoulder? You know, it's completely inconsequential. And for that, his son got so much agitated that he cursed him to die within 7 days to be bitten by this takshaka, snake bird. So Shamik Rishi was extremely repentant, and he was feeling very much in his heart that, you know, this is something way beyond, the punishment is way beyond what Maharaj Parikshit deserved. So he conveyed this news to Maharaj Parikshit. And Srila Prabhupada writes in a very nice purport that both Shamik Rishi as well as Parikshit Maharaj were pure devotees of the Lord. And when pure devotee receives the news that he is going to leave his body, it is not as if, you know, Parikshit Maharaj could have gone to Shamik Rishi and begged for forgiveness. You know? And very likely Shamik Rishi could have also forgiven him. But because Maharaj Parikshit realized that actually Shamik Rishi was so repentant, he was feeling so bad in his heart that, you know, such a thing has happened to him, that Parikshit Maharaj said, yeah, this is all ordained by the Lord. You know, this is all the arrangement of the Lord now. You know, let me just go and prepare for my final time of death. Right? So you can imagine this contrast in his consciousness. You know, here is a person who materially was the king of the whole planet Earth. There is nobody superior to him. But yet, when the time came where everything is going to be taken away from his life, he was completely unaffected. So this is indeed a tremendous, a huge contrast, right? Just because of his consciousness was so well situated that he was completely unaffected, right? In our lives, we see that there are so many things, small things that happen, you know, particularly when we are dealing with devotees, you know, relationships, and somebody tells us something or somebody does something to us, and, you know, immediately we are so much agitated, we become so much affected by it. You know, even though we might have been practicing Krishna consciousness for 15, 20, 25 years, you know, even if somebody says something to us, we feel so much affected. Right? Actually, that is the time when we should be introspecting what is the level of advancement that we have made in Krishna consciousness. Maybe we have spent 15, 20, 25 years, you know, chanting our rounds and associating with devotees and all that. But when this small tests come into our lives, like I was just mentioning in Vada last week, you know, that, you know, tests are going to be coming into our lives day in and day out. You know, because this is the nature of this material world. You know, matras parshastha kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukada agamam paino nitya stamti tikshasa bharata. This material world is a world of duality. You are going to have happiness and suffering coming into our life, just like the summer and the winter season. But a person of discrimination does not get affected by this, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna. So our level of Krishna consciousness is tested at the time when such small crises come into our lives. And Krishna, because he is so compassionate upon us, you know, he sees to it that these crises that come into our lives are so insignificant, right? Actually, they should not be affecting us at all. But they do. And then not only do we, want to justify that, you know, what happened to me was not really what should not have happened to me at all, but somebody else is responsible, and then we keep going and talking to people about it, and then we start, you know, taking their advice. How does one counteract the situation? You know, that person told me this, but it's actually not true. And there is so much of negativity in our heart because of this. You know? So by the pages of the Bhagavatam, if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, then actually we realize that, come on, what is this? It's so insignificant. Let's move on in life. You know, this is going to happen to us. It's already happened to me today, but it's going to happen to me tomorrow for sure. But are we going to get affected by this? Are we going to go into a defense mode and then try to justify whatever we did, whatever happened to us? Or we are just going to continue with life and, you know, continue with our devotional service? So that is the test that Krishna will put us to. And, you know, depending on the level of our consciousness, Krishna will put us to different degrees of tests. Right? Now, Parikshit Maharaj, or for that matter, Narad Muni, in his previous birth, a small boy of 5 years of age. Now, Vyasadeva and Narad Muni are having a conversation with each other. Right? And Narad Muni is now explaining to him, because Vyasadeva has asked a very practical question. Now, you please tell me, how is it that you are able to remember something that happened in your previous life, which just didn't happen, I mean, immediately, but happened in a previous yuga? How come you're able to still remember this? So Vyasadeva asks this question, and then Narad Muni narrates his whole life story. Right? And he tells Vyasadeva that, you know, I was a small boy of 5 years of age, this Mahabhagavats had come to my house, and, you know, my mother was a maid servant. There was nothing very significant about her. She was just an ordinary maid servant. But this Mahabhagavats were very merciful to me. And because of their mercy upon me, I was able to take the remnants. And this remnants transformed his consciousness to such an extent that when a few days later his mother left her body, you know, because she was bitten by a snake, Narad Muni, as a boy in a previous birth, was completely unaffected. You know, his heart was already completely purified. And then he thought that this is the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to make me renounce whatever attachments I have. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that sometimes in our life, situations come upon us by which Krishna takes away everything whatever we have. And for Narad Muni, as a small boy of 5 years of age, his mother was the only person in his life. Right? Who is more dear to you than your own mother? Particularly when you are 5 years of age, when you don't know anything about anything. And yet Narad Muni thought that this is the supreme arrangement of Krishna, so that I can now focus on taking complete shelter of him. So Narad Muni leaves home, and then it's described how he walks through, you know, very, very beautiful places, cities, and, you know, farmlands, and beautiful gardens, and skyscraper buildings, and whatnot, you know, such opulent environments he passes through. But, and Narad Muni could have actually stopped over there, and he could have, you know, maybe looked around and made some arrangement for his comfortable stay over there. But no, he decided now is the time when I should be actually taking shelter of Krishna, and all these wonderful facilities are nothing but a hindrance in my Krishna consciousness. So let me continue on my journey. And then he moves, and then, you know, the next destination, he comes across forests which are deep and dark and, you know, gloomy, a lot of wild animals. And Narad Muni decides that this is the place where he could be actually finding Krishna. And then he sits over there in meditation, meditating on Krishna in his, Vishnu in his heart. And all of a sudden, the Lord appears in his heart. And Narad Muni's complete body becomes suffused with ecstasy. So Narad Muni could have been terribly affected by the situation that he was put in. Right? Obviously, from the pages of that Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many instances again, we have Srivast Thakur. Right? Of course, he was an associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was put into a situation where his whole integrity and his whole character was questioned. Could have been questioned. Right? But then he was such a humble soul that he just took it as an arrangement of the Lord. You know, this person who was so envious about of him, Gopal Chapala, when he made this arrangement to have this worship of Durga, all the remnants of the worship of Durga placed outside his house, just so that all the neighbors should see and really come to an understanding that Srivast Thakur is not actually a Vaishnava, but he is actually practicing all these tantric methods of worship. But the moment Srivast Thakur opened the door of his house and he saw for himself all these things outside the house, he was least affected. On the contrary, he called everybody and started telling them that, see, actually all of you are thinking that I am worshipping Vishnu, but actually I am worshipping Mother Durga. Right? But nobody believed him. And everybody just went about and helped him to clean the place. They brought cow dung and washed and wiped the place clean. Right? So a devotee, he encounters difficulties in his life. But then the true test of his Krishna consciousness is how he accepts those difficulties in his life. And of course, Krishna is so merciful that he gives us difficulties only to the extent that we can tolerate them. Right? That is his mercy upon us. So at every stage of our life, we are in a position where we can take shelter of Krishna. At every stage of our Krishna consciousness. Also we see over here in this very wonderful verses how Lord Krishna is inviting all these residents of Vrindavan, the Brajvasis, to be coming under the shelter of Govardhan Hill. And if one sees, Govardhan Hill is definitely, you know, has its limitations. You know, even today if you see, it can be traversed in a few hours. It's not so big that it can possibly hold from a mundane intelligence, it can possibly hold so many people or so many different animals and wagons and so on and so forth. Right? But obviously, because Krishna was touching Govardhan Hill, Govardhan just expanded. And not just the Brajvasis, but the cows, and the cows were running into millions and quadrillions. Right? Asankhya was the number of cows that were there in Nanda Maharaj's and all the Brajvasis' goshalas. So all these cows coming under the shelter of Govardhan Hill, right? So we see that how, you know, Krishna expands the spiritual world to accommodate each and every one of us. Each and every living entity who can take shelter of Krishna has got a space for himself in the spiritual world. So this is so much hope-giving. Right? Even a dog, right, who would be considered to be the most insignificant of creatures. Right? Dog is the only animal that is actually, you know, kept away. Even in getting a dog into a temple is considered to be inauspicious, because a dog makes no distinction and it, you know, urinates on Tulsi Maharani. So that's the intelligence of a dog. But then we see from the pastime of Shivanand Sen how a dog, you know, got the mercy of the Lord. An insignificant creature. Just because the dog was somehow or the other trying to take shelter of Shivanand Sen, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liberated this dog and sent him to the spiritual world. Right? So every living entity that takes shelter of Krishna has got a space for himself in the spiritual world. And also we see that there is no discrimination in the spiritual world. Discrimination in terms of the quality of consciousness. Like there are different ways by which we can serve Krishna. In Shantaras, in Vatsalya Ras, in Madhurya Ras. Even in Dasya Ras, which is supposed to be actually a very inert way of serving Krishna, Krishna gives the opportunity for a person in that consciousness or in that mood to serve him. You know, he takes the form of a stone in Golok Vrindavan. So that is why it is said that every object in Golok Vrindavan is Chintamani. It is live. It has an ability to serve. And it uses that particular ability to serve Krishna in its own way. So devotees are actually fearless when it comes to practicing this process of Krishna consciousness. And if you see the life of Srila Prabhupada himself, you know, we have a person who at the age of 70 decides, I mean, it's not that he decided then, but he had decided long back, but at that particular age, he leaves the hallowed precincts of Vrindavan in order to go to the capital of sin, New York. And it was not as if he was received over there with a very elaborate reception and there were plenty of people to serve him and, you know, help him in his movement. I mean, he lands over there and he doesn't even have a place to stay. Like, we go now to any part of the world, right? By his mercy. I couldn't believe it, but, you know, in the most freezing parts of the world today, you have a ISKCON center, right? Very close to Siberia, where the temperatures come down to minus 40 degrees. I mean, for us sitting over here, minus 40 degrees is just a figure, you know, because we don't have any concept of temperatures even at zero. What to talk about minus 40, right? But in such a place, Krishna consciousness is thriving. Now, people are really taking shelter of Krishna. All by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. But initially when Srila Prabhupada went to New York, there was nobody. You know, he just was given a ticket to board a bus, Greyhound bus, which took him to Butler, Pennsylvania. And it was not as if Sally Agarwal and, you know, Mr. Agarwal had a huge house where they could accommodate him. And they had a small apartment. Of course, their heart was very big. He was the one who actually sponsored, his father was the one who actually sponsored Prabhupada's visa. So just by performing that devotional service, you know, he would have earned so much of spiritual merits. And Mr. Agarwal, what's his name? Gopal Agarwal. Yeah, Mr. Gopal Agarwal, I mean, he was very receptive to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada had to stay in the YMCA. There was a guest house. I mean, there was a room provided for him in the YMCA with no cooking facilities. And Srila Prabhupada every day had to come down to Gopal Agarwal's house in order to cook his prasadam. And, you know, so much of description in the Lilamrit, you know, how in the same fridge there used to be, you know, meat and Srila Prabhupada's transcendental boga kept together. Right? I mean, those were the days that Srila Prabhupada experienced for the first 1 year of his journey, of his stay in Krishna consciousness in New York, in America. But Srila Prabhupada never gave up. He just took it that this is the arrangement of the Lord and somehow or the other, you know, that faith and that determination that Srila Prabhupada exhibited was so inspiring. It's so inspiring for all of us. You know, when an old man of 70 can do that, what can't we do? You know, when we relatively, you know, younger bodies, we are able to, you know, what all can't we do in Krishna consciousness, in the service of Srila Prabhupada, in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Right? And then, further on, during his entire period of 12 years, after that, you know, Yadubhad Prabhu is now going to come out with this beautiful movie, Acharya the movie, which is going to depict this entire life of Srila Prabhupada during those 12 years. And for the 12 years beginning from 2015, as he was explaining on yesterday, this is going to be relived again and again and again in each of the places that Srila Prabhupada inaugurated during this entire period of 12 years. Right? So we are going to be having every temple celebrating its 50th year. Right? Beginning with the matchless gift, which started off in 1966. So we are going to have the first in 2016. And then San Francisco, Montreal, Right? These are the places where the centers were begun initially. Buffalo. And then we come down to London. And then we come to Vrindavan, Bombay. So this entire period of 12 years, beginning from 2015, is going to be a celebration of what Srila Prabhupada did for all of us. And it is an opportunity for us to take even more shelter of Srila Prabhupada. So we have all these disciples of Srila Prabhupada who are showing us the way forward. Even though we might be tested in terms of disease and old age and finally eventually death, there is hope for us. When we see all these wonderful senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada like Asasaki Mataji and Yadubar Prabhu. So we have, they're wonderful examples, you know, at their age, which is more than 60 years today. In spite of a failing body, they're still struggling and pushing on, you know, just to inspire us. So these are the role models that we have in front of us, you know, by which we should get inspired by. Take the association, hear from them. Yadubar Prabhu had met Srila Prabhupada in 1971, and even today, like 42 years later, the memories of his meetings with Srila Prabhupada are so vivid in his mind that he is able to narrate, and with so much of enthusiasm, like we all heard on Sunday, so much of enthusiasm is there, right? So obviously, those memories are extremely touching to their heart. It has transformed their lives. And even though Srila Prabhupada departed almost 35 years back, those memories are so fresh as if they happened yesterday. Right? So at least me, I have been unfortunate not to have had the association of Srila Prabhupada. But we have the association of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And of course the grand disciples from whom we can get inspired by. And finally, at the time of our death, which is going to be the final test, which is going to be the most fearful part of our life, right? As His Holiness Radhanath Swami and so many personalities would keep on telling us that, you know, when you encounter death, it is like being bitten by 40,000 scorpions, right? I've never had the experience of being bitten by a scorpion in my life, but I'm sure it must be extremely painful to be bitten by one scorpion. So if you get bitten by 40,000 scorpions at the same time, you can imagine what will be, right, the state of our consciousness. You know, the amount of pain that we will be experiencing when the soul leaves the body will be unbearable if it was not to be in the association of devotees. Right? So we see devotees who are going through so much of health crises like our beloved Kirtida Mataji. Right? I was just talking to Muralidhar Prabhu a few days back, and he was telling me that, you know, she has accepted that her days on this planet Earth are numbered. So she has come to that conclusion that now it's all going to get over in a matter of weeks or months. So that acceptance is such a great boon to us at the time when we are actually preparing to depart from this. You know, if you ask Vishwaroop Prabhu, he will tell us that, you know, in the hospitals, when they keep telling people that they got, you know, maybe a few weeks to leave, you know, how that person goes through so much of different emotions. The first emotion that that person experiences is complete denial. You know, he says, no, this can't happen to me. There's something absolutely wrong in this diagnosis. You know, there's absolute denial. A person goes into a complete denial mode. Right? So denial, from the stage of denial to the stage of acceptance is, you know, quite a process. For a materialistic person, you know, he may never come to the stage of acceptance at all. Before that, he leaves his body. Right? So here, Kirtida Mataji is finally accepted that now, you know, she is And she's preparing herself so wonderfully. Like last Sunday, I was so much inspired that in spite of her health being what it is, she came all the way to attend the Bhagavatam class of His Holiness Radhanath Swami. Sunday it was Govind Prabhu. But on Saturday also she was there and she was attending the class of His Holiness Radhanath Swami. And I was so inspired just seeing her, and I was thinking to myself, my God, her body, you know, is practically now falling apart. She must be having so much of pain in her body because cancer is such a painful disease. But yet, she is sitting over there and, you know, relishing Srimad Bhagavatam with such intensity. And I was just thinking to myself that hopefully one day, I was praying to Gopinath that if I have to go through such a situation that she is going through, it would be so wonderful. Like if you compare Kirtida Mataji with Parikshit Maharaj. Now in one sense, Parikshit Maharaj had a very young body, right? He was able to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days and seven nights without even drinking a drop of water, right? That was his physical stamina. And of course, he was relishing Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was telling Sukadev Goswami that there's no need for me to drink any water because what is emanating from your mouth is so delicious that I am just tasting the nectar of what you are giving me, that there's no need for me even to drink water or to eat food or to even sleep. Right? But his physical body was strong. Right? He was young. But then when your body becomes decrepit and old and diseased, in order to have that consciousness that we are, you know, slowly approaching death and we are preparing for it, and we are experiencing Srimad Bhagavatam in that consciousness, that means that we have actually passed the test that Krishna is putting us through. Right, like true difficulty, like I remember Braj Bihari Prabhu was telling me that, you know, Krishna consciousness in one sense is like doing Nirjal Ekadashi. Right? I do Nirjal Ekadashi once a year. I mean, that's something I consider great because my body just can't sustain without food. But now what happens when a person does Nirjal Ekadashi? If you compare a person doing Nirjal Ekadashi, that one day that he does with the lifespan of an individual, right? In the morning time of the day that we are fasting Nirjal Ekadashi, we are very active, right? There's no problem. Guru Puja is there. We are dancing up and down, right? So that is compared to the youth of our life, where we are young, we are having young body, there's absolutely no problem, we can practice all sorts of austerities. But then slowly, as we start becoming older, as the day progresses in our Nirjal Ekadashi, what is the most difficult part of that particular day, which is the toughest for us to follow? Right? It's the evening, late evening, it's the night, just before we go to sleep. Right? I mean, I must make a confession that, you know, the closest thing to me when I go to sleep on the Nirjal Ekadashi day is a bottle of water. I just keep it there right next to me, not knowing if in the middle of the night I'm going to be needing it. So I just keep it along with me. And somehow, of course, by Krishna's mercy, I have not felt the need for it, but it's there. So that's the time when we are actually, you know, requiring maximum amount of shelter. You know, because our mind and our body, if we feel so weak and lack of energy. So similarly, in our sojourn towards going home back to Godhead, the later part of our life when we are in our 60s and 70s, that is a time when we actually try to take shelter of something, which is the time that we should actually be taking shelter of Krishna. Right? If we take shelter of Krishna at that time of our lives, then Krishna really takes care to ensure that we are able to pass through those difficult days without too much of difficulties. Right? So that's the aspiration that all of us should have, that at that particular time when we require, you know, devotees the most, we are in the association of devotees. You know, if not by anything else, even though our mind may be completely, you know, in a agitated state, as His Holiness Devamrit Swami was mentioning in a class that he gave 2 weeks back, even though our mind may not be in a condition that, you know, we could be thinking about Krishna, if we have given our whole life to Krishna, then Krishna will see to it that he comes into our mind at the time of our death. So that is Krishna's mercy. And that is what all of us have to aspire for. Because this material world is such a fearful place, you know, where Krishna himself has to tell the Brajavasis not to be afraid. What is our condition? Right? Those who are so dear to him, so close to him, those who have seen who he is and how much control he has over the material world. If those people, to them, Krishna has to tell them that don't be afraid, don't be fearful. It's really hope-giving. Right? So actually Krishna is also telling us, don't be afraid. Ananyas chintayan tomam ye janat paryupashate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshema mahamiham. I will preserve what you have and I'll carry what you lack. Krishna assures us. Right? So this is again a very hope-giving statement that Lord Krishna makes over here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll end class over here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.